Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
We're going to be Southside regardless. Nobody's decision determines, you know, what we got going on in this locker room. I feel like we got a great group of guys here. We're going to do something special. The White Sox moving in the right direction. Like I said, one decision don't, dictate our season.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. That's Tim Anderson. Mm-hmm. He is the shortstop. Has been, will remain the shortstop of the Chicago White Sox, and he doesn't care who is coming or going, and one decision by a free agent won't affect their season, and that's nice to think of.
I think what he's trying to say is he's glad it's over.
Yes.
He's glad the...
There's resolution. He's probably glad he's not moving position, too.
I think that was probably the current of resentment, if you want to call it that, the implication that... Well, you're a pretty good shortstop. You've made some pretty good progress here, Timmy. But, if Manny comes, you're second baseman or you're an outfielder or you're anywhere but where you want to be. You are not going to be a shortstop if Manny Machado's here. That was the tone of every question asked Tim Anderson since Sox Fest.
And we spoke to him about that.
Yeah.
He came on our show, and I thought he handled that very well. He understood the difference between himself and Manny Machado in a free agent signing that would cost that amount of money.
He did, but I think that there was always that fatigue.
Doesn't mean he didn't resent it.
Yeah, and I think you sensed that a little bit yesterday from the Sox players that had moved on. And these are players that still believe that things are headed in the right direction. And their arrow, is pointing up despite the disappointment that people felt yesterday over the Machado news. The question that you come out of this, and there's so many different ways to analyze the Sox without Machado. I do wonder when you build up something like this, a lot of times it's like, okay, who pays? Yeah. Who pays? Whose job does this affect most by not getting him?
Rick's not going to get fired over this, is he?
Rick Hahn?
No.
No.
Is Kenny going to get fired over it?
No.
No?
No.
So who was left?
Well, I think your manager, Rick Renteria, probably will suffer the most by not getting Manny Machado.
Because they lose the 10 games better than they
were. You get Manny Machado, you're flirting with .500. You don't get Manny Machado. I don't know what to expect from the Sox team. I really don't. It could go south again. I think you feel good about the direction, but you don't know for sure.
100-loss season? Is that what you mean by south?
You're closer to that than you are to a winning record, aren't you? Or are you? I guess maybe that's the question I have of this spring training.
Are you closer to 62 wins than 82 wins?
I don't know the answer to that because I have spent so much time projecting the Sox with Machado, projecting what this could do to the direction of the franchise.
I'm over it.
Okay.
I am over it because you can't miss what you never had. And it was just a little fantasy. It was just a little push of the fast forward button on the rebuild, and I'm over it, and it's okay. What I don't like is on the day that didn't happen, you turn around and my goodness gracious, Basabe goes down with a hand injury. Not that he was coming up, but it's just another reminder that you can have all the prospects in the world, but you would like someone with an actual track record in Major League Baseball in order to predict how you're going to play in Major League Baseball. As simple as that. It's mm-hmm. great to have all the prospects in the world, but as we well know, there is a certain growing pains that everybody kind of goes through if you're with the White Sox.
That's a good point to remember. It's unfortunate we had to be reminded of it. But
yes.
So if you're looking at this soberly and you're looking at this like, okay, the day after Manny said no, You tell me. I mean, are the Sox closer to 62 victories or 82?
I will tell you when I get out to spring training and get a chance to look at them a little bit.
But if you had a sense right now, I think that's incomplete roster.
Well,
it's there's pitching concerns.
Okay,
the starting rotation's really problematic. It really is right
short,
now.
You're short a pitcher. No
consistency wise, like what you just said, the proven nature of guys in your rotation just isn't there.
But I would argue that a little bit. I think Rodon, you know what you're getting.
I like
with
Rodon.
Him. Okay, you like him. You kind of have a feel for what he can do. I think Ivan Nova, you got a feel for what he can do, right?
You're hopeful.
They went out and got him. I feel like he can be okay. Are they going to get Gio Gonzalez? I would imagine they do.
If they get Gio Gonzalez,
that's another guy.
That's a stabilizing force in your pitching rotation.
Ronaldo
you feel
Lopez,
better about that. Okay.
You know, you can roll him out. He can take the ball. I'm not sure what to make of Giolito. I thought he took a major step backward last year. I thought that he looked pretty good the year before, but I thought he took a step back. And then they've got other guys kind of lined up there that I don't know what to expect from. But I think the bullpen will be better than it was a year ago. I think they always I trust in Coop. I think he does a pretty good job of getting those guys up
the
and running.
The bullpen, in theory, will be better than it was a year ago, Molly.
Yeah.
But will they have leads to protect? Will they have games to save?
I don't know.
That's the problem when you have a 62-victory season is that you don't know how much to trust your closer because there weren't many games to close.
Yeah, I don't know how to answer that, David. But I think that when I look at they need more star power. No, I don't think I think they're going to be improved because all the younger guys are kind of a year older. And I think that Aloy coming up, I don't know that he's going to set the world on fire, but I think he looks like a pretty professional hitter.
I think he could set the world on fire.
Well, I know you do.
I really think that he's your next superstar in Chicago
baseball.
Well,
I hope so. I really hope so.
And I think that was going to happen with or without Manny Machado. I think certainly he would have had more lineup protection if you have a guy like Machado
in the
order with.
But who's starting in center field
right now?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, it's
John Jay.
Is it John Jay over Engel? Is that what is
Well,
happened
I think you got John Jay.
And
you can argue why you got John Jay, but
well,
I think that,
we know why you got John Jay.
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of both guys. It doesn't. You don't have that position on lockdown. There's certainly opportunity for an upgrade if you have the right free agent that you sign. If there's somebody on that pile of discarded guys or guys who are waiting for the market to move.
So is Nicky Delmonico starting in left field? Is Aloy going to take over from Polka in right field, or is he coming in and he can move?
Aloy's playing left, isn't he?
I don't know that.
Realistic expectations for Daniel Polka.
That could be a pretty bad outfield.
Defensively?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, every time Adam Engel is in there, he covers 2/3 of it, though.
Does he?
Well.
Okay. I mean, is the catching position better than it was a year ago? You go around the infield. I have no real.
There are a lot of questions for a team coming off a 100-loss season. That's why I'm saying if you start to look at who suffers the most immediately from not getting Manny Machado, you're right about the front office stability. They're going to maintain the continuity for guys who were at the front of this rebuild.
Yeah, they're in the middle of a rebuild. You're right.
The manager is always the one who suffers the most. And the guy who's closer to 100 losses again than a winning record is probably going to be the sacrificial lamb at some point.
I would imagine so. I would imagine so. But am I wrong to think that there is sort of an inevitability to that? I mean, I don't mean to be cruel about it, but it seemed to me
that you thought that was going to happen maybe regardless of whether or not Machado came.
I really like Rick Renteria. I think he's a really super good guy and a enthusiastic person and all that. But I never envisioned him as the guy at the helm when they were making their playoff run eventually.
Well, last Friday, before hope was crushed about Manny Machado, we had Sam Paniatovic, and he had odds for the 2020 manager of the Chicago White Sox.
And we thought at that point they might get Manny.
And we thought that would be like a legitimate question, like who's going to take them to the next level?
Right.
They just may have to address that question sooner rather than later if things go south again. That's unfortunate for Rick Renteria, but that could be baseball. I hope it doesn't come to that, but you could see where they would want to get a different manager, maybe a different voice if they have another season like last year.
So Rick was on with Lawrence yesterday, and we'll play you a couple of cuts from that when we come back and take a listen to what he has to say about these subjects. Go ahead.
And I want to mention something that Steve Phillips said when we come back, because the former general manager on MLB Network tweeted something very interesting.
Mully and Haw on the Score. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. Yeah, so Steve Phillips sent out a text. He made a really good point, I thought, and something that we haven't talked about and should consider, the idea that that when you're giving Manny Machado the contract that you were talking about giving him, basically you're not ready to compete for the first 2 years of that deal. So he's giving up 2 years of his career immediately to get you, as you say, maybe to 500, and then maybe moving forward you start winning. So if you're giving away 2 years of his career to start with, why aren't you giving him 2 years on the back end, which makes sense? You're effectively taking an 8-year deal, and there's six prime years in it that you're really interested in, and why not make it up to him at the back end when your team is better?
And that was a question that everyone had, was if you're going to go 8 years and guarantee $250 million, why would you tack on 2 years of incentive-based years on the back end of the contract, which requires him to make 550 plate appearances at the age of 34 and 35. Now, even with the DH, there's no guarantees of that. There's no guarantees of health. There's no guarantee, period. And I think what Steve Phillips tweeted out, and this is what he said, "I know the White Sox are disappointed they didn't get Machado, but the Padres understood something they did not. If teams want a superstar to commit to 2 years of losing on the front end of the deal, then the player is going to want the team to commit to 2 years of decline on the back end." Now, that is good awareness, and I think that's what the Sox didn't do and what the Padres did. And the difference in incentives would have made the White Sox deal richer in their minds, which is what they're clinging to. But overall, 10 years, $300 million without a penny deferred is what spoke. It was a language that Manny Machado was speaking, and it met what his demands were known to be. And the White Sox did not do that, and that is why today Manny Machado is a Padre and not in a White Sox uniform.
Yeah, you know, again, it's yesterday's news. I mean, it's, you know, I guess it was news to us yesterday because we hadn't talked about it, but it actually happened the day before. Now we're on to the moving on part. And, you know, Hawk said at the convention, and I don't know how much faith you can put in what Hawk says, but he said that he thought that the White Sox had the greatest collection of talent he'd ever seen in their minor league system. Now, I think that's maybe
exaggeration,
hyperbole.
Yeah,
maybe. Potentially. Yeah.
Just as tad.
But I do think that, you know, it's on to the next issues. It's on to everything else. And I'm kind of along. I'm with Tim Anderson. You
know, right.
You
got to move on.
I would love if they could reverse it and change it, but that's done. It's over.
Right.
So now you got to move
you.
On with
I
it.
I thought Rick Hahn closed a couple of the loops very well last night in a good interview with Lawrence Holmes, who asked all the right questions, and some of the answers that he had, you know, he couldn't get into or elaborate on, certainly, you know, things that happened during the negotiations. One thing I thought was very interesting: Kenny Williams made it seem like there was a ceiling, a $300 million threshold that they wouldn't cross, correct? And that, to me, left people asking, why is this the case? And I think it sort of was contradictory to what Rick Hahn told Lawrence when he was asked about, is there any cap on the money for free agents?
There is no magic limit on where we would go. You got to make the evaluation based on every individual player. They're obviously all different. They have different risks. They've got different upside, different benefits, and how it fits to the club. And at no point did we sit in a room and say, I don't care who it is, we're never going to pay above X. That just isn't the case. In this deal, at the end of the day, we weren't comfortable, as Kenny alluded to, we weren't going to get to that level, but we obviously tried to address some other concerns that the player had in order to make the offer appealing.
Yeah, they have limits, okay? You know it, I know it, Kenny knows it, Rick might deny it, but he knows it too. They have limits. There is a limit to how much money they can spend. I never heard the White Sox come out and say that they're willing to spend stupid money. And even the team that said they were willing to spend stupid money apparently has balked at some of how stupid the money is.
They've yet to spend a dime.
That's right.
You know, of that stupid money.
Right. Well, on that particular, they've
sure.
spent some
money. Yeah, I mean, in terms of those two guys.
Exactly. So I think that there are limits. You know, I think that they were prepared to make the best offer they could and to go down swinging. They feel like they wanted to make sure that they were in it, and they were, you know, if you remember, there were a lot of talk at the fan convention about this idea that, you know, can we convert, but we've earned our seat at the table.
Right.
I don't understand any of that. The one thing that Rick Renteria said, it was the players we have are real. The guys that are here, meaning at that event, are real. So that's really what you're back to. You're back to the reality of their situation. You are back to the reel that they have, the players that they've managed to put together, and how will they now shape as a team, and how long will it take before they're viable major leaguers?
And you're back to a situation where had you removed Manny Machado's name from every conversation with the White Sox this offseason, which sounds ridiculous, but had you done that, would you still feel good about the team that you saw, the players that Renteria was referencing, this whole idea of a rebuild? And Rick Hahn addressed that with Lawrence because despite the disappointment, he's trying to stay positive.
Look at the total framework of what we've accomplished in the last, you know, little over 2 years since we started this rebuild in earnest. There's a lot of good things going on. There's a lot of positive improvements as an organization, and a lot of the depth, a lot of the upside, and a very fine, young, championship-caliber core coming together. It's absolutely that disappointment and not being able to add to it in the last couple of days, but we're not going to stop continuing to try to add to it, and it's going to happen at some point here in the hopefully not too distant future that people are going to start seeing what people around the league are talking about in terms of what we're capable of doing.
And Joe, I think that that may ring hollow. That may ring hollow to a lot of people, but the fact of the matter is, what rings hollow to me isn't necessarily that they haven't put together the core, that they haven't put together what he called it a championship core,
yeah,
and that they haven't put together. My problem is the injuries that have hit it, right? I'd feel a lot better about things if Kopech were at the top of that rotation as we start laying out the names of guys, and he's not. He's had Tommy John surgery, and he's, you know, they talked about the one thing he's got to do is learn patience because he's chomping at the bit, and you can't get there yet, right? Champing at the bit.
Yeah, put a little more pressure on the kids that are coming through the system. They barely played. They haven't done anything at this level, and they're saying they're part of a championship core.
But they, not only that, they're not available to you, right? I mean, your
timelines push back and push back
exactly,
like the Bulls.
Exactly, because of all the injuries. They had, I can think of about 10 injuries last year that you just slapped yourself on the forehead, and now Wasabi going down and on the day they don't get Manny.
That was a joke, yeah.
It's
seemed very fluky, just the rash of injuries and to key guys.
But apparently it's not because they already got one going this year. Stay healthy, please. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Time to bring in our friend Greg Gabriel. Greg, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Greg.
I'm real good. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing well. I saw the Pro Football Weekly book is out. The magazine is out, and was looking through some of the prospects and the write-ups, and great work as always. How many, you know, we're a week away from the combine, Greg. How many guys, every year I hear guys say, boy, I'd love it if we only drafted guys that worked out. I'd love it if we could all agree. But every year, guys don't work out, and they get drafted very high anyway. And in fact, you could argue that it's a mistake to work out for some players at the combine. What's your take on the whole thing?
Well, if you go back to when the combine originally came into place, and that was January of 1985, and the first combine was actually outdoors. I was at it. It was at Arizona State. But the purpose of the combine was more the medical than the workout. The workout was like the bonus. We got everybody here. We might as well get a workout in. And then, of course, you had the pro days, and you still have the pro days. Now, years back, I'm not going to say half the guys didn't work out, but there was a high percentage because they didn't like that old AstroTurf surface at the old dome in, what was it called, the RCA Dome in Indianapolis. And so guys balked at running, and one year they put down a running track type surface over the AstroTurf. That didn't work very good. But since they've gone to the field turf, it's been pretty uniform. Times have been very good. And most guys work out. I think the only position where it actually can hurt the player and you need him to throw, that was the quarterbacks, because it just, you know, the other positions, it's basic drills that it relies on the player doing good. Well, at the quarterback position, he's throwing the receivers he doesn't know, and the receiver could run a terrible route. The quarterback could have a great throw, but you wouldn't know that because of the poor route the receiver had. So, and I don't think it's very easy to evaluate a quarterback in that type of situation. Quarterback's getting two throws, he goes to the back of the line, he waits three or four more minutes, gets his two more throws. You know, you get no kind of rhythm.
Greg, the Steelers made some news this week that I think Bears fans want to think might affect them. I'm not sure about that, but first of all, Le'Veon Bell, they announced yesterday they will not apply the franchise tag on him. He will become a free agent, a move that he celebrated online, and there'll be a lot of interest in a guy in Le'Veon Bell, even if he's out of shape. There'll be a lot of interest in him. I don't think the Bears have the room to pursue that. And Antonio Brown, I know how you feel about the Steelers trading him and what that means to their payroll and their salary cap hit and all those things, and yet they seem to be moving closer to that. My question is more the price for Antonio Brown. Joel Corey from CBSSports.com speculated might be no more than a third-round pick because of all the baggage. That seems incredibly low to me. What do you think the price tag will be for Antonio Brown if indeed they can deal him?
Well, first let's back up a little bit, and they traded Bryant to the Raiders, what was it, a year ago, and got a third-round pick. And he was like their number three receiver and had all sorts of suspensions during the course of his career. So if you got a third round pick for Bryant, what do you think Brown's worth, who's one of the most productive receivers in NFL history? So I think they easily get a number one. Kevin is a shrewd general manager, been in the position a long time. He's not going to give his best offensive weapon away at a bargain price. He's going to hold on to him before he's going to give him away. And, you know, we talked about the salary last week, and actually, even though it's a $21 million cap hit, it really becomes a wash because his cap number for this year, the way the contract is structured, is around $19 million. So the actual hit to them this particular year would be, if they traded him this year, it would only really be $2 million because of, you know, if he stays, that number's built into this year's cap. So it's not, you're losing the player, but you're not really losing the space.
And unfortunately, the I guess he wants a new deal wherever he winds up. So you get him because all the money accelerates from the reworking of the contract. That's why it's $20 million. But you get, you know, you presumably have, as you say, it's built into the cap. You have to do it before March so the roster bonus doesn't hit. But wherever he winds up, it's a pretty decent-looking base salary, but he wants a pay raise. He says he's, you know, part of it is he needs a new deal. He's got 3 years left, I believe.
Yes, he does have 3 years left on the deal. But, you know, Mike, we've seen this play out a lot of times. A lot of players say they want new deals. That doesn't mean they're necessarily going to get one. I would think in a situation like this that anybody who is looking to trade for him is going to ask the Steelers if they can have permission to talk to him and sit down and talk to him and see if they can have a meeting of the minds and not only talk to his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, you know, about the money, but also talk to the player to get a feeling for the player. And obviously in a situation like that, he's going to be in his best behavior. But yeah, I think all the circumstances surrounding what happened in Pittsburgh that last third of the season, that's going to hurt the Steelers as far as value. But I think reality is it's not going to hurt it much because he is the player that he is. There's no taking away from that, and he's going to help the team. And I'm going to tell you a team that, and I just thought about this before I came on, that could be in play for both Bell and Brown, doesn't mean these guys want to go there, but they got the money and they need the players, is Buffalo. And the reason being is Buffalo, like the Rams a couple of years ago, like the Bears last year, they got a young quarterback and they got to surround him with good skill position people, and they have the money to do it. They've got $80 million in cap space right now.
The Packers have some draft picks they could dangle too, and the Colts have the cap space, and boy, would that team be dynamic if you had those two guys with Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton, and goodness sakes, that would be a force in the AFC if they could find a way to finagle that.
Yeah, the one thing, though, is Chris wants, and I don't see a problem with him trying to get Brown. It wouldn't cost him anything to, or not Brown, Bell, wouldn't cost him anything except the contract. But does he want Brown because of the baggage that he brings? Chris wants to have as many good people as he can in the locker room. So he may balk at that one, but he has to get some more skilled people on his team too, and he's got more money than anybody else, but I think he's going to, you know, Chris the way I do, he's going to be very wise with the way he spends it.
I think he's already said he doesn't want to kind of poison the locker room, right?
Right. No, he said that, and if you know Chris, that's exactly, he means that too. He wants to have a good locker room situation. He wants to have good team chemistry, and he's not going to bring in somebody that's going to rock everything.
Greg, this is the first week teams can apply the franchise tag. I don't think the Bears will probably use that tool. Maybe you see ways that they could. I think it'd be a bad idea, and I think you've pointed this out on social media, to overreact to Bryce Callahan and tag him as a cornerback, as a nickel guy. I think you can figure out a smarter way to keep him. Adrian Amos, same sort of situation. If he walks, I think you can probably find an upgrade in free agency. How do you expect the Bears to proceed?
Just as you said, as far as tagging, franchise tag, transition tag, they won't do anything. I mean, first of all, just look at it logically. The franchise tag last year if Fuller had he got the transition tag, but if they had put the franchise tag on him last year, I think it was $14.975 million. This year, as Big Z pointed out, I think it's going to be close. The numbers haven't come out yet. They won't come out for another week and a half, but it's going to be closer to $16 million. You're not going to give $16 million to a guy that isn't considered a starter, even though he plays 80% of the downs when he was healthy. He's still not considered a starter. He's the third cornerback, and you're not going to pay him $6 or $7 million more than Prince Amukamara. So that's totally out of the question. And I'm not going to say that Adrian Amos is the weak link of the secondary, but he's the strong safety. It's the easiest position to replace. I think they've got two guys in the roster, and Bush and Houston, that they could put into that position. I think, you know, Bush played the free safety position. He's more of a strong safety type. When Jackson went down with the injury, you know, after game 14. So I think they're in good shape there. Plus, the safety market in free agency is real deep, or looks real deep right now. That could obviously change in the next couple of weeks. But I think you're going to bring back at least one, I would think, because of value position. It's going to be Callahan, but it could even be both if you can get the right deal done with Adrian Amos. Don't forget, either next year or the year after, you're going to have to pay Eddie Jackson.
It's difficult to look at the combine without just talking about Kyler Murray, because obviously his measurement is going to be the thing everybody looks at. At least that's one of the top stories. Why, you know, how closely do teams adhere to so-called prototypes? I mean, you can be too tall for the position, and you can be too short for the position. Now, it's shifting and changing because the college game translates better than ever before, but what would, is there a cutoff line for him, Greg? How will he be viewed?
You know, Mike, I think it's going to be on a team-by-team basis, and there's going to be a coach and a GM that are going to say, regardless, this guy can be the man for our franchise, and throw out all the prototypes. And, you know, who knows what he's, I'm guessing 5'9" and a half. Maybe he'll be 5'10". Maybe he'll be an even 5'9". But he's going to be shorter than 5'10", and it's going to be the first time, if he ends up going in the first round, and he will, be the first time that a quarterback that short's gone in the first round. So it's breaking new ground, but I know there's going to be somebody who's going to do it. Who, I don't know, But at the same time, the person that does do it is actually gambling his career, because if it fails, he's going to end up paying for it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that. There's the whole career gamble that comes into play. All right, Craig. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Greg.
Okay, guys. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Nothing riding on it.
No.
Just everything.
Just everything. Yeah.
You know, it's a tough one. That's a real tough call.
We always kind of overanalyze whether or not quarterbacks or participate fully at the combine, yeah, whether they throw and don't throw.
They shouldn't.
They probably have more to lose than to gain.
Yeah. You get to bring your people in. You throw to a receiver you like. You get a rhythm going with somebody. I mean, you're better off on your college day throwing, and that's the sad reality.
You're better off if you're a quarterback, especially these days, keeping the mystery alive and making people wonder what your ceiling is. Don't give them evidence. It's kind of like a defendant if you want to testify. Don't say nothing that can hurt you in your case.
You're better off if you're a guy like Kyler Murray. If you're a guy that barely gets invited to the combine.
Two different scenarios.
Yes.
If you're a guy at the top of the draft who everyone's curious about,
yes.
Show them less.
Exactly.
Make them want more.
Yeah. Make them come out and try to do it under your kind of
make them watch the Big 12 tape. That speaks pretty loudly.
You draft them then. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.